The FT.
Just one topic for this week's show, nuclear energy, the emergency in Japan and the impact on the energy sector in the rest of the world. You're listening to Energy Weekly with me, Sylvia Pfeiffer. I'll start the show today with an update on the latest from Fukushima. We'll then move on to how the nuclear explosions have affected the energy markets.
I will say that the energy market at the moment is upside down because of the events in Japan and, of course, also the very supportive events that are happening across the Middle East and North Africa.
And what the situation could mean for the future of nuclear power.
This crisis and the decisions that governments are making today, they're going to shape the energy mix and the energy policy and the environmental policy of the planet for the next 40 to 50 years.
And we'll end the show with you and your comments about the crisis from our blog, Energy Source.
We've had a bit of a debate on the blog about whether Chris Huhne, the Energy Secretary, is in cahoots with the nuclear industry.
Joining me in the studio this week to talk nuclear is David Blair, the FT's energy correspondent. And to talk about the markets, we have the FT's commodities editor, Javier Blas. We'll also be joined later by Karen Stacey, the editor of Energy Source, to tell us about what you've been saying on our blog. I'll start the show with an update as to what's been happening around the world since Wednesday morning. Two big developments. In Japan, helicopter pilots who were attempting to dump water into the overheated fuel storage tank at Fukushima, the nuclear reactor, were forced to abandon the manoeuvre due to high levels of radiation over the plant. And an earlier Tokyo Electric Power, the utility that operates the plant, ordered its crew of 50 engineers who'd remained there in order to try and work inside the plant. They ordered them out of the plant after radiation levels jumped. The second big development today is further afield from Japan. China announced around lunchtime today that it was stopping or freezing all approvals for new nuclear power reactors pending a safety review. Now, that is very big news for the global nuclear industry, as China is the largest builder of new reactors. It's China that had been leading the so-called renaissance of nuclear power. Now, we'll be discussing all of this in the show later on, the impact of this on the energy markets and also what people have been saying on our blog, Energy Source. But just let me just go back closer to home now, where obviously a lot of the European governments have also already responded to the quake in Japan. Germany yesterday announced that it was withdrawing some of its reactors temporarily, again pending a safety review. And now, David Blair, you've been keeping your eye out on what's been happening in the UK, which has one of the most ambitious new nuclear build programmes in Europe. What's Chris Huhne, the Energy Minister, have been saying?
Well, Chris Huhne has asked the government's chief nuclear inspector, Dr. Mike Waitman, to conduct a report on the lessons, if any, from the Japanese crisis for the UK nuclear programme. Now, this will cover both Britain's existing reactors and also the proposals to build new ones. So the recommendations that he comes up with could potentially have an impact on investment decisions for the new build programme.
What's the industry been saying? Because obviously they're facing quite a big investment. I mean, any report or review is likely to come up with possibly additional safety mechanisms that they have to introduce. I mean, the costs are inevitably going to rise. Are they sort of worried about delays here?
The industry has been saying very little about any of this. The two principal consortia involved in planning for new reactors have each issued rather bland statements welcoming the government's decision to conduct this report and also expressing their dismay over what's happened in Japan. But in terms of the possible impacts on their decision making, it depends on what Dr. Waitman comes up with. But as you say, there's a real possibility that he will make additional safety recommendations, which will inevitably be costly to implement. And the cost factor is already pretty pressing, particularly as uniquely in the world, the British government, the British New Build Nuclear Programme, is supposed to go ahead without any government support at all. It's entirely to be funded by the private sector. This is already a very big request to make. And if Dr. Waitman's report makes additional requirements, then that could alter the balance of calculation.
What does this mean then for climate policy in the UK? Because again, most of the sort of developed or governments in developed worlds have backed nuclear power as a sort of clean source of clean energy. If we're now no longer going to have new nuclear, then what happens to climate policy?
This is the great danger that the government faces. If the nuclear new build programme is deferred or set back in any way, then gas-fired power stations will inevitably fill the gap. And gas, of course, is a fossil fuel. And while it's much cleaner than coal, for example, it still doesn't involve carbon emissions. So the government's targets for carbon emission reductions risk being blown off course by all this. So the political will behind the new nuclear program probably won't change. It's the question of whether the economics, which were already looking pretty unfavourable, whether they will be altered.
Thanks very much. Let's move on to the energy markets and how they've been affected by the situation in Japan. Javier, what's happened to uranium prices since the quake?
Prices are absolutely on a free fall. They have already dropped more than 10%, and potentially they are going to move a lot more. Prices were trading in February around $75 per pound, and the market is already trading at 55, and some traders believe that prices could drop to 50, probably find a floor there. But more importantly, forecast that the market was going to move into a deficit and prices going to just increase back to the levels of 2008 of $140 per pound now seems absolutely just forgotten for the industry. And the share price of the big miners of uranium, both Cameco in Canada and Areva in France, have fallen very, very sharply. So it's a whole rethinking on the commodity markets about what the demand for uranium will be in the next year for sure, but also potentially in the next decades to come.
Are there any big projects that were due to come online? I mean, I presume people aren't changing their investment decisions at this stage.
Well, I think that the miners are at the moment with a watching eye on A, the price, and B, what the policy decisions around the world are. It seems that countries, at the very least, are taking a review that is going to mean a delay in projects and potentially more costs, as we were speaking. So that means that some projects are going to be uneconomical and maybe they were not built at all. The main eye of the industry is in China and India. They have big programs coming on a stream, and that was where the demand for new uranium was going to be coming over the next 20 years. The stop on all the development of the nuclear industry in the country, that just could lead some miners to rethink what they are going to do.
And LNG has been quite heavily affected as well, hasn't it? I mean, Shell, Simon Henry, the chief financial officer of Shell, was yesterday talking about LNG prices rising on the back of events in Japan. And I spoke to a few analysts this morning, one of them who said over the next year or two, the consensus apparently is that up to 5 million tonnes of additional LNG demand could be coming from Japan.
Indeed, I will say that the energy market at the moment is upside down because of the events in Japan and, of course, also the very supportive events that are happening across the Middle East and North Africa. So Japan nuclear power, it's down about 25%. So Japan, as soon as the reconstruction starts and factories come back online, is going to need a lot of additional fuels to make electricity. And they have three alternatives. It could be LNG, liquefied natural gas. It could be thermal coal, or it could be a combination of crude oil and fuel oil. Probably the demand of the three is going to increase. We saw in previous events where Japan has nuclear power problems in 2007 and in 2002 that the three alternative energies for generating electricity in Japan increase. And that's having a global impact. We have seen prices for natural gas in Europe moving up because it's going to be competition from Japan for extra cargos of LNG, as the analysts were telling you and Shell mentioned yesterday. And at the same time, we have increased costs on thermal coal, because the expectation is that because some of the utilities in Europe will need more coal as LNG will go to Japan, but also the Japan over the long term may need more thermal coal. And at the same time, the electricity costs in Europe were sharply moving earlier this week because of the decision in Germany to shut down at least for 3 months some of the between 25 and a third of the country nuclear capacity. We saw the price of electricity for delivery next month in Germany spiking almost at 20%. It's just unheard of. And I'm told that traders were reeling on what was happening on the market. If governments, because of this crisis, decide to stop nuclear power and invest in natural gas or invest in thermal coal, these are investments that are put today and they're going to be in place for 20, 30, 40 years. So it means that this crisis and the decisions that governments are making today, they're going to shape the energy mix of the and the energy policy and the environmental policy of the planet for the next 40 to 50 years.
And the inevitable question, though, who's going to benefit from this? Again, somebody said to me this morning that they thought the Qataris are in the best situation. You know, they could go to Japan and say, we'll cover the shortfall for you.
Absolutely. Qatar is the country that potentially is going to be benefit the most from the situation. They have extra capacity on LNG. So I think that the prices will be capped because Qatar could increase production of LNG quite significantly. They have two new plants coming on stream over the last few months, and Qatar could put a lot of more production into the water and just ship it to Japan. Obviously, producers of thermal coal, Australia, South Africa, Colombia, Russia, they are going to also set to benefit. And in general, I will say that is over the long term, potentially this crisis is a net benefit to the Middle East producers of energy, whatever it is, Middle East and North Africa, whatever it is, use producers of gas such as Algeria or Qatar, or producers of oil such as Saudi Arabia and the Emirates.
Thanks very much. And finally, Kieran Stacey, the editor of our blog Energy Source, joins us. Now, Kieran, what's been going on in terms of the discussions online?
Well, no surprise that it's all about nuclear on the blog, or it has been really since the Japan earthquake. The two things that our readers are talking about, one is the different attitudes that governments around the world have taken to nuclear power. And there's clearly a bit of a split developing between China, India, some of the developing economies, and Western governments, which are being much more cautious on their words about new nuclear in the future. China came out pretty quickly, as you mentioned, and said, we think we can learn the lessons from Japan and move on as planned.
Indeed, they were basically saying this is not a problem for China at the beginning of the crisis. But as we speak now, the State Council has put a statement. They are going to review all the projects. Everything is going to be a stop for the time being, even projects on earlier stages of development. And the Chinese said now that they need to learn from the lesson of this. What this is going to mean, we don't know yet.
As far as the UK goes, we've had a bit of a debate on the blog about whether Chris Huhne, the Energy Secretary, is in cahoots with the nuclear industry. There's a theory that this review that's being carried out that David talked about with Mike Wakeman is just a bit of a cover and is not really going to change anything at all. And of course, there is good reason for that. You know, Chris Huhne has to hit our carbon reduction targets and sees this as a good way to do it. And he said many times in the past he's very reluctant to move towards gas, which, as David mentioned, would be an alternative. But there is a very vociferous gas lobby in the UK, and they are vociferous on our blog too, and they're very upset with him. They say there's a gas glut. Prices of natural gas historically are quite low, although obviously they're rising at the moment, and they say that that the UK is really missing an opportunity here. And they say he's effectively been nobbled by the nuclear industry.
And we've got another Q&A coming up next week. Could you just tell us about that?
That's right. We've got Francesco Starace, who's the chief executive of NL Green Power. You may remember EGP was spun out of NL, the Italian utility, with a huge IPO last year, but nowhere near as big as the company was hoping. So it was trying to list really at a time that was very difficult for the renewables market and the renewables industry. Investors were getting spooked by certain governmental changes to subsidies. They were also still reeling from the financial crisis, and investors were shying away. So he's going to be in a good position to talk about, you know, how difficult a process that was and what the future really is for renewables, in particularly in Europe, over the next few years.
Because shares in solar companies have soared, haven't they, in recent days? So he can maybe talk about that. So when is this going to go up?
So we're asking readers to send in questions by Sunday, and he will respond on the blog next Friday.
Thanks very much, Kieran. If you'd like to have your say, do log on and post a comment on Energy Source. And that's all we have time for today. All that's left is for me to thank Javier Blas, David Blair and Kieran Stacey in the studio. Energy Weekly is produced by LJ Filotrani. I'm Sylvia Pfeiffer. Until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.